This is Drunk on Comics, episode 120, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com. Dude, all I know is I got clocktobered last night at Oktoberfest.
And you came up with another good word, and I forgot what that was, too.
Oh, no, I said on the tweet, I was like, look out, Oktoberfest, you're about to get Octobered. Or maybe we're going to get Clocktobered.
Clocktobered works.
Yeah.
So did you have any problems getting through all those tokens?
Oh, no. Well, the mini donuts at the end helped.
Oh, you got some? Which ones did you get? I got the peanut butter ones. Oh,
I don't know. You ate one of them.
I did.
Anyways, we are Drunk on Comics, here to talk about our drinking feats and our comic books.
And you're clappy today.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah,
it was Oktoberfest, and
it still is.
True, yeah. And it's a lot of fun
and a lot of beer.
Yes.
See, that's my problem. Is I always buy the Stein when I go, and then I feel like it's necessary to fill it up, because the only way you buy two beers at once, and so two beers fills that thing half full. That's not enough.
How much goes into a Stein? Is it it almost looks like 2 liters?
Well,
a liter cola.
Oh, yeah, I don't want a goddamn liter of cola. No, it was the Stein, that at least the one that I had, 24 ounces filled it halfway.
Okay.
So, you know, roughly
so 48 ounces.
I want to see someone bust out a Das Boot.
Yeah.
To this, I have not seen that. Now, granted, that might be. I mean, those are usually pretty thin glass, and you don't want a whoopsie on those. But that's what I need to see. Yeah, everyone's got these big, huge, thick ass glass steins, and that's pretty cool. But where's Das Boot?
Yeah. Well, I got Das Boot. I got Das Boot right up your asses. Let's get into Off the Shelf. What?
I don't know. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I giggled a little.
That was a shitty transition. All right. Sorry, Derek. All right, sorry for calling you out, man.
Well, if you got a better one.
No, I'm just going to sit here and complain about you.
All right. Well, how about you
start?
Complain about a comic. Or don't complain about a comic.
No, I'm not going to complain about a comic. I mean, there's probably a few books I read this week that I probably could complain about. But instead, I'll give you a review you can complain to me about.
Okay.
Well, wait, no. Oh, we'll complain about the review, not about the comic. I see how it goes.
Yeah, because it's going to leave you unfulfilled. You're just not going to be happy with it.
Oh, so it's going to be like all my ex-girlfriends. That'll be great. Unfulfilled, unsatisfied. Oh, wait, am I going to have to pay for your comic, too? Because that would fit right in with all them as well.
You should start paying for my comic books.
Okay.
That'd be fun.
Guys dating now? Jeez, unfulfillment, buying stuff for each other.
Sounds like a trap.
Podcast listeners, I'm bringing to the table this week another thrilling issue of Letter 44. Well, of course, I say that, then I make it sound like I'm going to be reading it to you. But, but no, I'm going to review Letter 44. And if you're not familiar with this series, that is written by Charles Soule. Illustrated by Alberto Jimenez Albuquerque, colors by Dan Jackson. And I just noticed lettered by Crank.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Is that a person or a team?
Crank, I'm pretty sure, is a person, if I remember correctly.
I think it's a part of your body.
But only the guys' bodies. That reminds me of something we'll talk about when we get to Booze in the Book later. Okay.
So I've mentioned this book over and over again. Our Grand Con episode. I even mentioned it, that this is a book that I'm encouraging people who have not read anything recently, that they could go and pick this up. And it's the same case here with issue 10 by Oni Press, released this week. And the last few issues, I mean, they've all been good reads, but what really drew me into this issue is there's a lot of action happening in deep space. There's even action happening on Earth, and it reads very fast paced and feels like really like a action TV movie thingy.
Okay.
Thingy.
Okay. Well, Kev, can you get me caught up a little bit here? Because I stopped reading, not because I didn't enjoy it.
Well, I know you have a problem, Derek. You buy too many damn books.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, and actually, this is one where I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to enjoy this one more in trade format. That's a personal thing for me.
Sure. Now, are you saying you're going to pick it up in trades because you think you're going to enjoy it more reading
one big chunk?
I don't know. Is like binge reading?
Yeah, yeah. kind of like how you get a new series on Netflix and you watch all of them in one weekend.
Okay, so. So what's been
Tony's just like,
yep,
that's me.
Well, what's been happening in the world of Letter 44 is the current president has decided he's going to take all this advanced weaponry that the previous administration created, and instead of sitting on them and using them exclusively for their space journey, he's going to release them to the modern, or to the U.S. Army, to quickly end all the wars.
Mm-hmm.
And this has put several people on edge across the world, because right now everyone's sort of on the same page. Everyone has M-44s and basically the same airplanes. I mean, United States has, you know, of course, slightly advanced, but the weaponry and the advanced technical machinery that they're implementing in these armies are light years ahead of what everyone else has in the world.
Mm.
So the United States is slowly developing enemies within the world because they shot past everybody.
Yeah.
And that's gonna upset some people. So that's the Earth conflict that's going on right now. And there's some behind the scenes drama happening between senators that's completely riveting.
So it's like based on real life?
It's, well, there is,
honestly, yeah. Yeah. In some aspects there is. They've kind of hinted as the what has happened with President Bush and the events that occurred leading up to the economic bubble. They've kind of touched on that and how those real world events actually kind of plays together in this make believe world. It's an interesting and like, hey, why not? Maybe this book is telling us what's really happening, man. It's giving you the inside dish.
It's like not Rorschach's thing, but pretty much his book at the end of Watchmen, where it explains everything that happened, and once it gets out, everyone will know the truth. They're secretly trying to leak it out so that people will think, oh, it's just a comic book. That can't be true. Conspiracy theories.
But then there's also what this conflict that's occurring in space, and the Earth folk and the people, the life forms that they're encountering, there's something happening between the two. I'm going to leave it vague like that.
Damn it.
Are you not going to say they're aliens?
Oh, they're aliens.
They're aliens, but
they're not from Earth.
But you said they're life forms.
Well, he's not saying that they're humanoid.
What's the difference between an alien and life form?
I guess nothing.
Okay. I didn't know it. Like,
let me be argumentative. Damn, I want to get in this conversation. I seriously, okay, this book, every time that it's out at the comic book shop, I have all of them. I have not gotten time to read them.
Yeah, see,
because I collect way too many. You kind of just stop because you're smart and you're like,
you're going to be in for a treat. And honest to God, the story arc went from 1 to 6, and now then 7 probably
12,
maybe 13. I don't know, but. And again, when you read it, it's gonna be a fast read.
Yeah,
it's that good.
Well, and one of the reasons why I wanted to do this in trade versus the single issues is it's one of those that when I got to the end of the issue, every time I was like, "Damn it, I want more! I want more!
Oh,
I
yeah.
want more!" Like it felt like that little girl from the damn AT&T commercials. You know the
what about her?
I felt like, you know what I'm talking about?
Wait, you want more AT&T ads? That's what I'm doing.
Actually, I do kind of want more of those ads with the little kids.
The kids?
Yeah, from AT&T, where it's like the guy's like sitting there, he's like, and he's asking the questions. The one little girl's like, it's like when you get your raisins, and you know, and you really like them. But you want
so my
more.
Mind is already thinking about the current AT&T ads with a dopey girl in the store trying to sell us on family plans.
She's hot, though.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
No.
Isn't that AT&T?
No. No, that's next stop.
I think that was...
Beep, beep. God, when is somebody going to come out with a phone where you just, like, click a button and talk to somebody?
Like a walkie-talkie.
That would be awesome. Anyway, Kevin, let's wrap.
Yeah, so, I guess I don't... I think I just... I guess that'll be my review. Good fast-paced read. Believe you wanting for more. The art, very good, as always.
That's been solid since the beginning.
Yeah. Very, very detailed. I thought this one had a little bit more detail than the last few issues, even though it's been consistently done by Albuquerque and Jackson. So
I really want to grab your book and see what those life forms are and other stuff in there. So, yeah, I'll do that.
But you might look at it and go, this more resemble aliens than life forms. Maybe.
All right, tell them what you got.
I have G.I. Joe number 1. Now, this is...
Hello? Isn't it G.I. Joe?
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, something like that. Dun, 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 no, this dun, is...
G.I. Joe is there.
Wow, you know more of the...
G.I. Joe.
A true American hero.
It's a real American hero.
Whatever.
The more you know.
Yeah, that would be awesome if we actually planned that.
Just came natural. No, but this is the... I talked about this about a month ago, this book coming out. It's The Fall of G.I. Joe. And the concept of this book, you have all the main characters still.
I'm acting like a 3-year-old. Gimme. Holy yes. crap. Okay, I'm sorry. Keep going.
And when you're reading this, you're in the mental state of, okay, G.I. Joe's going to be fighting Cobra soon. So let's find what the plot is. You know, where's, you know, Serpentor? Where's he going to, you know, take over next? Or where's Destro at? And who's the bad guy in this issue? And where are the Joes at? It's not. It starts off with...
Bureaucracy?
Pretty much so. Cobra is a peacekeeping force now. Cobra is the good guys. Where this came about and how this came about, it doesn't necessarily say in this issue. I'm sure they're going to go into more detail of how Cobra changed their scales or stripes or whatever. I'm trying to put a metaphor in there of snakes, but that sucked.
How they slithered over to the good side?
Yes.
They're shedding their skin of evil.
Before getting more in depth of how this story is taking place, though, the art in here is just fantastic.
That's why I grabbed it. Holy fuck, is that gorgeous.
Steve Kurth, like, oh, it's beautiful. And the coloring even by Keto Young, amazing. The layout of everything is mainly, you know, traditional layout, but there's some panels that just flow and work, and you can see minute details on people, like a small scar on a cheek and everything.
I'll tell you, I'm going to go back to the shop and buy that book just because I want to look at that artwork. I'm floored. That's some of the prettiest stuff I've seen in a long time.
Well, just like even coming up with this concept, though, the writer, Karen Travis, as I said, they're a peacekeeping force, and you're then trying to figure out, well, where's G.I. Joe? What's going on with them? Well, within budget cuts and everything and not really having a bad guy, they're kind of going before Senate hearings saying, hey, I think you still need us as a special ops team. It's not going all that well, especially with Cobra being over in, I forget the two made up, Galibi and Shleteva, if I can make up those weird countries.
I say, man.
You make up words all the time. Why can't you figure these out?
Come on, man. Channel your inner Oktoberfest where you're kind of just half-assing the names of the beers together.
Mr. Skirburn,
Dunkelheisen?
Well, anyways, these countries that I can't pronounce, somewhere mid-east, obviously there's oil there too, so it's, U.S. is going to probably want to get in, but Cobra is really taking them to task of saying, hey, we are the ones here. We were hired by this team to negotiate with the other side. We don't want Western influence. Well, the other country does say that they kind of want to, off the books, you know, someone to kind of help facilitate to see what's going on. And so the G.I. Joes do get a relief of before shutting them down. They got this one last mission to kind of prove that they're still worth it in the world, because without having the huge bad guys of Cobra, really who else is there? But as some of the guys were saying, there's always going to be bad guys. There's always going to be someone coming and taking that mantle. They need us. But as they're saying too, money is this. And then what was funny was they were saying, yeah, back in the day, all we had to do is say Cobra was doing this and we'd get any budget that we wanted, you know. Now, they didn't say it, but, you know, we get laser guns and, like, flying hovercrafts and, yeah, and all that stuff that we'd remember from our childhood. But still, that's kind of how G.I. Joes were. So when you read this, you got to kind of totally take a step back and say, this is kind of like a different take on what you've always read and loved. But still knowing there's something devious going on with Cobra. And they didn't really get to it in this book. I'm just waiting for that shoe to drop. But the G.I. Joes are heading over there, so they're getting out of a helicopter. And at that point, the person that's working for Cobra is kind of saying, we're over here, we're trying to do this, but there's the Western influence over here. There are so many bases within these countries of U.S. military forces that we know they're going to intervene. We should do peaceful protests outside those places. Tell them that we don't want their influence over here. Pretty much doing some PR spin to say, U.S. forces are not needed, you suck. And the Joes kind of go, did they just declare war on us? And they're like, we think so. And then you see them dropping out of the helicopter, and it kind of gets to a point of...
Well, don't finish the whole story, because...
No, I'm going to say, yeah. It gets to a point where it ends.
Okay.
A little bit, but not really.
this is... okay. This is really funny because, Tony, when we first started about doing this podcast, it all stemmed out of the fact that you and I would sit there and go, did you read this? And then we'd get really excited about something that we hadn't read. You know, and you and I have different tastes, so we don't read a lot of the same books. We read some. I'm really glad that you picked that book up, because I just went, G.I. Joe. And just went by it.
Same with me. I'm not a huge G.I. Joe person, but... I was like, I'm going to try this out, and I'm so glad I did. This is amazing, and I'm going to definitely keep picking this up, and
well,
I think
yeah,
you should too.
That artwork alone. And if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, but Karen Travis, the writer, I believe this is her first foray into comics. I know that she's like a novelist, and I know that she was like, you know, a New York Times bestselling novelist. But I think this is her first comic.
I do believe remember hearing that. And kudos to her. She's doing a great job.
Cool. And I got to look up Steve Kurth and see what else he's done because, wow, that is just fucking pretty. So, cool. Thank you for actually bringing that up. I've actually got Wayward, number two, from Image Comics. And this is written by Jim Zub, who I had the pleasure of interviewing briefly in Toronto. Line art is Steve Cummings. Colors are, excuse me, John Roush and Jim Zub. Letters, Marshall Dillon. And back matter, Zach Davison, which I'll explain a little bit of that later. But this story, issue one came out, Kevin, when you and I were in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And yep. So I didn't have a chance to, I probably would have reviewed issue one on the podcast that week had I been here. Since I wasn't, this is cool because now we actually get a number two and we rarely talk number twos because normally number ones are always so good.
Yeah.
That, and we
and they're like usually jumping on points.
Well, yeah. And you'd hope. God, that'd be terrible. But no, like normally we skip the number two issue because we just talked to number one and we try not to talk about the same book 2 weeks in a row. But this is one where issue one definitely drew me in. And if I was to pick up issue two of this, I would probably be a little bit confused, but in a good enough way that I would want to go back and buy issue one. The story here focuses around a young girl who is like in her second year of high school named Rory Lane. And Rory's father was Irish and her mother was Japanese. And they've split, and so she has left Ireland to go live in Tokyo. Oh,
so like, I'm trying to think of Miles O'Brien in Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you remember Miles O'Brien from Star Trek?
No.
And his wife, what was Logan's flame over in Japan?
Mariko?
Mariko, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was her name. Anyway, Star Trek.
Okay, so I'm going to boldly go back to here.
Oh, okay, all right.
That's a Star Trek thing. I'm just fucking up all my transitions. Excuse me, I make myself laugh.
Take another swig of beer, eh?
Yeah.
Or have a Pepsi, choice of a new generation.
The next generation, is that what you're getting at? Yeah.
Fuck that one.
All right, well...
God, how old is that fucking slogan?
I don't know. Can I continue to Babylon 5 here about my comic? All right.
Doctor, who are you talking about?
Yeah.
Well, come on! Now you're switching genres.
Hey, no, there was a Doctor Who crossover.
Oh, there was, yeah. Yeah, in the comics. So, okay.
You're starting to bore me to death.
Wow. Quit being an assimilated. All right, this is good. This has got to stop. Okay, so Rory Lane is this young... Kevin's just shaking his head. This young girl moves to Japan to live with her mom, and when she...
Sounds like a Klingon.
Okay.
We're just randomly picking out aliens from the TNG universe?
Yeah, I don't know.
Ferengi! How can we come up with a joke about Ferengis?
Ferengis! Oh, wait. Yeah.
I like how none of this has anything to do with this genre of a book either.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe if you were talking about Star Trek, we could be saying all this.
Okay. All right. Well.
Sorry, Derek.
That's fine. It's all tribbles in the end. That doesn't make any sense.
None of what we're saying is making any sense.
That's kind of why I was doing it. So anyway, this young girl moves to Japan, and she finds when she's getting there, all of a sudden things are getting a little weird. She's starting to develop some powers where it's really cool, kind of how they do it in here, and I'll show you. Like, all of a sudden she sees things in a little bit different way, and she sees, like, these little tendrils of light that, you know, kind of, that she can kind of see, kind of like, you know, pointing her directions and different options. And it reminds me almost of, like, a video game, in a sense, where, like, you're like, ooh, I could go this path, I could go that path, and you can kind of see how the paths may lead, but you don't see the actual end to it. You just see how they... If I was to go from here, I could go here, 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 and here, and here really quickly in succession. It's...
I'm trying to, like, the only thing I can think of kind of is, you ever see Donnie Darko?
Yeah, a long time
ago. Where, like, that timeline loop of, like, him coming. I guess it wouldn't really be like that, so never mind. I'll stick to Star Trek. Yeah. Stupid things.
What a Vulcan. So, don't. Come on. All right, so anyway, in Tokyo, there are a bunch of kind of otherworldly demons that are roaming around that she has now found out about. There's a lot of supernatural stuff going on. And it's kind of her journey, learning about her new powers, learning about a new land. And this is just a really fun book that Jim Zub has kind of put together. It's nice because the main character, she has problems with her dad. You know, the relationships aren't that good. She's in it, you know, she speaks Japanese, but they actually address that in here that, you know, when she was back in Ireland, everybody thought it was cool because she could speak Japanese, and now she gets to Japan and realizes that Japanese isn't as quite as good as, you know, what it should be. You know, so there's a lot of good struggles with the main character that you can kind of relate with, and I think that's one of the reasons why I'm enjoying this, because you guys know, if I don't relate to a character, I'm typically done with the book. But she finds another guy in here who's basically eating spirits or eating souls, another guy in her high school, and she met another person in the first issue. So there are other people out there that have powers, and they're all just kind of trying to figure out what's really going on with it. And it leaves you hanging with a little something if you read the first issue. If you didn't read the first issue, you're going to be like, well, that's just weird, you know. But and I did mention about Zach Davison, that he had back matter, and he gives kind of some little information about, like, you know, schools in Japan and just kind of, you know, the Japanese culture as it will, which actually adds quite a bit to the comic. So if you're not really familiar with Japanese culture, this is actually real life. It's not the kind of bullshit that you see on TV or in movies, you know, where they're just showing, like, the flashes of this and that. This is very, very grounded, and I just really enjoyed it. The artwork in here by Cummings and, you know, colors by Rauch and Zub, really, really nice stuff. Very well laid out, and it definitely feels kind of like an otherworldly area. So I'm enjoying this. I know that issue one sold out and had to go to reprint. So if you can find issue one, go grab it and grab issue two as well. They're really fast reads, and they're actually both issues I went back and reread. So,
do you think they'll live long and prosper?
Ow. That warp drive. So, all right, guys, I think that's going to wrap it up for Off the Shelf.
Did you guys know that, I'm sorry to interject this, because, here at Drunken Comics, we try our hardest to stay on topic and stick with the game plan.
Yeah.
That we always have before we start recording. But do you guys know that September 25th, which was just a couple days ago from when we're recording right now?
I do. There were two things, Rosh Hashanah and National Comic Book Day.
Well, I knew about Rosh Hashanah, but I did not know about National Comic Book Day.
Yeah, what the fuck is that? I know Free Comic Book Day. National Comic Book Day.
You know about Free Comic Book Day because I'm wearing the t-shirt.
That, and I just know it's always the first Saturday in May.
as you double-check my shirt to make sure you're right. Yeah, it was National Comic Book Day.
I mean, did anything happen? And it's a Thursday, so that's weird.
Well, okay.
Well, of course, it's a day. It's a day, not a particular day of the week, kind of like Free Comic Book Day, where it's the first Saturday.
Right.
But, like, is it really mention-worthy?
Apparently it is now, because you already did. All
right.
All right.
I got some other sprinkles to throw in there to throw our game off.
Okay, sprinkle away.
Oh no! We're gonna stick with the program, and then I'm gonna.
Okay. Well, you know, this sounds like it should make some love sprinkles. You guys familiar with a rub and smell?
Love sprinkles. What the
fuck? Yeah.
What the hell are those?
We did not pre-production talk of that.
Well, no, like love sprinkles are kind of like knuckle children.
Oh, drain babies. Yeah. All that. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
What, Tony? You wishing you could like warp back in time now and, you know, beam out of this conversation?
Yes.
All right, so anyway.
What are we talking about?
Are you familiar with a rub and smell?
Yeah, I've heard of that because I know scratch and sniff is a trademark copyright, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, so.
By Nabisco, or I don't know. Nabisco? I don't know. Wait, would be a company that would most likely have scratch and sniff technology wrapped up. Unilever?
Charmin? All right, so anyway. Harley Quinn is getting her own, not scratch and sniff, but a rub and smell comic.
Does it? No, I didn't read the article all the way through. Does it explain what it's supposed to smell like?
They're going to be 4 scents. Leather, suntan lotion, pizza.
Does she still have her pet beaver?
I don't know, but that's just leaving the door wide open.
Okay,
And then the fourth scent is an unnamed scent of a, quote, mysterious compound.
And is this all in one issue?
All in one issue. Now, here's the funny thing is that...
Which is, you mean it's not funny yet?
Well, no, that mysterious compound, apparently, that's only going to be available in the U.S. versions. Overseas, it's going to be... Fresh cut grass is the fourth scent. Sure. So, which makes me go, fresh cut grass, weed. Are they putting pot in this thing? That's all I could.
Patchouli oil.
At first, I thought you were going to say that they're not having this in other countries because the chemical used to create the scents is toxic.
That makes sense.
Other countries deem that substance as toxic.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know, but this is, I think this is going to be for the annual that's coming out. Yeah, it's the Harley Quinn annual number one.
So they're really desperate to try people to get to read it, their damn annuals.
I might actually get this one. Like, I'm not going to...
You're just going to open it in the store and just scratch it and sit it there?
No, I'm going
to rub it. They're probably going to be in bags.
I mean, rub it.
I'm going to rub and smell. Yeah. Rub and smell sounds so filthy. I'm sorry, but anyway, so that's coming out here. I don't know, sometime. Now,
did you see that Dark Horse is coming out with a comic book about earthquake preparedness?
No.
I can't wait to read that. I've been wanting to be prepared for an earthquake for quite some time.
Well, I mean,
it gives me the tremors just thinking about it.
Well, we being in the Midwest, you know, it could happen. The big one could happen.
When this hits the stands, it's going to be earth-shattering.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm shaking in my boots just thinking about it.
All right. What's next?
I was waiting for more information on...
Seriously, that was the whole... I pulled this article up as I'm flipping through the feeds. Like... That's all they say. Oregon commissioned Dark Horse Comics to come up with a comic book on earthquake preparedness.
Okay, this is more of a note, really, and it's two things. But I just wanted to do a quick mention. Bryan Singer is officially on board to direct the X-Men Apocalypse. Oh,
thank you.
And the one thing that I thought was just kind of interesting is that they're talking about if they have Storm, Phoenix, and Cyclops in these movies, they will pretty much have to recast them because they will have to be younger versions.
Thank God, though. Halle Berry sucked so badly as Storm.
I'm not... I'll be honest. I was not really a fan of Famke Janssen as Jean Grey. She did not okay.
But... Okay.
Why weren't you a fan?
You know, and maybe it wasn't her as much as it was the actual roles that were written. I know, she just didn't work for me as Jean.
No, she worked it. I didn't really care for her appearance in the third one.
I think...
But from females I talked to, they say that she's too bitchy.
Okay. Actually, that kind of goes along, I guess, what I was thinking, but I can see that being the girls that you talked to, their viewpoint. Because mine, she just comes across as too strong of a woman. And I've always seen Jean Grey as like a little bit more...
Girl next door, nice.
Girl next door, a little bit like... A little bit faltered, you know? I can't think of the word that... Because I killed too many fucking brain cells last night. But I guess...
Well, even with that being said, all the other actors that are playing the other parts now are a lot younger.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, yeah, you'd have these really older people. Well, I mean, movie magic makeup could make them look younger.
It's time. They had a good run. It's time to move on to a few other actors.
Yeah,
it's no harm. I mean, it happened with Jennifer Lawrence and who's the other one who played the?
Rebecca Romijn.
Thank you. For example, that was an
easy one though because she's a shapeshifter, so she can look like whoever she wants. And actually, Rebecca Romijn had a brief cameo in First Class.
Sure.
You know. Yeah, that was actually kind of funny when she shapeshifted in her.
But no, I mean, I guess for me, like somebody like Jean, I would picture more of like a Rachel McAdams type, you know, cute, vulnerable is the word I was looking for, not faltered. But that's
great news, man. What other great news we have?
Why the Last Man writes reverted back to the creative team.
That's really cool.
The only not cool thing, but the project's been in limbo for forever anyways, but they were trying to make a movie of it. At least the publishers were. Now that it's reverted back to Brian K. Vaughan and Pia Guerrera, hopefully maybe they could pick it back up, or maybe now that they have the rights can maybe put it out as a TV show. I think it'd be better as a TV show anyways, but it's a great book, and it's kind of cool to see creators get their stuff back.
Speaking of, this is pretty much breaking news as far as, you know, when we're recording our podcast, that Marvel and the family of Jack Kirby have finally settled after God knows how many years. And it was actually right before the Supreme Court was going to decide if they were going to hear this case. So, excuse me, there's no discussion of what the settlement was, but both parties seem to be happy.
I'm almost wondering, though, too, if Marvel Disney started realizing if it gets to that point and if they lose, how many doors that opens. Because once the Supreme Court kind of says, yeah, you owed the creator this, how many others? So it might have been just a smart side of Disney anyways.
Yeah, just pay it off, put it to bed. They got the money. Just put it to bed.
I think, though, too, is the right thing, too.
Release any details?
No details.
Yeah, sure, because it's going to be, it's probably multi-millions.
Oh, yeah, I would assume
so,
for sure.
Yeah, not surprising that they've led the details off the table.
But yeah.
Good for both parties, really. Yeah. This kind of stuff I don't really care too much. I mean, it needs to come up, but... Come on, it's 2014. This stuff was created back when.
Yeah,
I'm happy we're moving on.
Yeah, the Dark Horse comic Breath of Bones looks like it's going to be hitting the big screen. So, you know, that's it was a mini series written by Steve Niles and Matt Santoro. Dave Watcher did the art in that book, and that was back just 2 years ago, published in 2012. And so, looks like that's going to be coming to the big screen. So, I know you had Hellboy, but I don't think Dark Horse has had anything else go big screen or small screen for that matter, at least that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure there probably were. And I'm, oh, wait, who did Road to Perdition? Was that Dark Horse? I don't remember. Okay, anyway, so keep your eyes open for more news on that down the road. Tony, what else did you have? Or Kevin?
I got another sprinkle for you. The Flash pilot is going to be 3 minutes longer than previously announced.
Ooh, extra 3 minutes.
3 minutes. That's big. Well, man, I've been watching a lot of television lately, and there's a lot of ads for The Flash.
Really?
Never saw one ad for Arrow, but
family honor. Oh, Jesus!
Well, that damn not the Royals.
Oh, is that vampire show? Yeah. On the CW.
I don't know. I don't know.
It does. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But that.
But
was...
but it's gonna be it. It but it breaking down the 3 minutes. About a minute of that is actually going to be taken out of the season premiere of Supernatural.
Wow.
So, like, that kind of tells me that there's a kind of like a crossover between the two? That seems weird.
No, they're taking a minute out of, I think, the time slot for Supernatural. That's what that sounds like to me.
That's just...
Oh, okay, thank you for clarifying that. See, this is what happens when you skim the articles real fast. All
right. Did all you guys... Well, speaking of those two shows, anyone get to watch Gotham?
No.
Done. I got it recorded.
Yeah, I've heard great things.
The problem is that it's on during Monday Night Football.
The only complaint I heard was the... Why is Gotham being shot on the set of Law & Order SVU? I'm like, I haven't seen it. I don't know. So, speaking of DC stuff and the movie TV world, Suicide Squad sounds like it's officially a go for a movie.
Me?
I don't know. I always liked the idea of Suicide Squad, though. It's a good premise, Kevin. Quit rolling your eyes at me.
I guess. I mean, it's getting me about as excited as I was for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and
the movie was good.
All right, we'll talk later.
So it has been talked about that there is going to be a special Blu-ray cut of an extra 10 minutes to Days of Futures Past that will have the Rogue scene, as well as a bunch of other scenes of all those people that they talked about putting in the movie but didn't. So if you really like X-Men and want 10 extra minutes of that movie...
I do.
Wait for the Blu-ray next summer.
Yeah, I'm on it. That movie
was so much fun.
What's that?
That movie was so much fun.
Oh, dude, and like I got a little choked up when they killed Blink.
Yeah, but he didn't really die.
She?
Yeah.
Whatever. Did you watch the movie, Kevin?
You guys don't want to fucking talk about it.
Well, Kevin, maybe it's time for you to go back to school and do a little learning. And I think you should pick yourself up a class at Baltimore College. Because they now have a Marvel Comics course that's all about the comics and movie universe. Now, my concern is that it's going to be more about the movies and not about the comics, but still, that'd be cool to get to do that.
This one just pisses me off so much, because why the fuck? So there's been a conference scheduled for October 27th in San Diego to discuss a possible settlement of the trademark dispute between San Diego Comic-Con and Salt Lake Comic-Con.
Did you say possible settlement? I
said settlement, I think.
I think you said...
Sediment, like...
Sedimentary rock.
Like a piece of sand. There's a possible piece of sand.
We got some silt laying down here. We got to clean up.
Well, fuck you guys. But
So we went to
a Comic-Con the other day. We've gone to other Comic-Cons. Like, this one in particular just pissed me off because fuck Big Brother San Diego and thinking they have a right to Comic-Con. And we've talked about it before.
It's
but
short for Comic Convention.
Yeah.
So there.
But they're actually scheduling something to talk about it, so.
All right. Other weird things in the news. So we talked about the Spider-Woman variant cover that had everybody's panties in a bunch, including Spider-Woman's. Yeah. So that got a little bit, you know, kind of pushed off, that cover did.
Oh, sure.
And everybody's like, all right, Marvel listened. They aren't going to run that cover because we bitched. Well, now it's coming out that word is that editor-in-chief Axel Alonso says that, and I'm gonna quote this, what he said to Comic Book Resources. Clearly, unequivocally, I want to state that this is only a scheduling problem. The Manera covers were recast due to his schedule. He'll be doing more covers for us. In fact, he's working on one right now that will be announced sometime soon. This is purely an issue of his schedule not permitting him to do the two covers, Axis number 1 and Thor number 2. We overbooked him and the timing didn't work out. So, you know, it was sounding like they were pulling these covers and blah, blah, they're not. So I just wanted to kind of give people the heads up that those covers apparently are still going forward. So if you want them, you can still get them. One last thing. Tony, I think we got a lot more collection to do if we want to break the world record.
And, well, with our comics combined, we are not even close.
Yeah. the Guinness Book of World Records has now certified the world's largest comic collection at 94,268 issues deep. And apparently, it's interesting because the guy actually said, the comics count for this record occurred on May 1st, 2014, and he's got at least 1,000 more now. So, like, yeah, you know, there you go. But it's just going to kind of keep increasing. The one thing I did like, though, about this is that they called, these are unique issues, so there's no doubles.
Okay.
Because I was like, oh, cool.
Did you notice in the picture, which was on Comic Alliance, they actually, even though most of the comics shown are older, there's what in my eye it looks like a picture of the cover for Manifest Destiny in the corner, which is awesome.
Where are you seeing that one?
Upper left hand corner.
Upper left.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, and there's an Iron Man number one and a Daredevil number one sitting there, which I'm just like drooling over. I'm like, oh.
So they're making a big deal about the Bob's collection weighs an estimated 16,800 pounds. So how do they weigh that? They just weigh one issue and go, oh, I'll just apply this to all the other books.
Well, that's why it's estimated.
And does that include the bag and board?
Probably. And the boxes.
I think it was just more so that they could have more words to throw in a sentence because as they say that much, that's more than 8 tons of comics. So whether it's
about the same, that many 118 pounds, adult men.
Let's convert it to tons.
last thing I have, and this is a note. If you want to have a huge collection of comics and you really like Valiant comics in particular, Humble Bundle has the Valiant bundle going on right now.
Oh, that's cool.
So only a couple days left.
Okay.
I saw that, and I'm like, well, I should mention it. So, all right, I think that's going to do it for news for us. Should we move on to a little indie turnpike?
No.
Sure,
why not?
Okay. This week for indie turnpike, I have Butterfly.
I got a girly book?
Yeah? What of it?
Meadows and butterflies and
it's that tattoo that you got above your ass crack.
I'm gonna get it on my front so as I keep drinking beer it just turns into Mothra. You know, have a cute little eagle that eventually it's just like a raptor just going. So anyway, the story, the Butterfly number 1 of 4, this is from Archaea. which is, you know, part of the Boom Studios family. And the story is by Arash Amel, and it's written by Marguerite Bennett and illustrated by Antonio Fuso. Colors by Adam Guzowski and letters by Steve Wands, and a cover by Phil Noto. I wasn't really sure what this book was going to be about, but I was like, I opened it up. I'm like, oh, pretty artwork. Oh, it's Arkea. Yeah, they always put together a good book. And as I was reading through it, I'm like, okay, I get this. It's spy. It's espionage. It's cool. And then all of a sudden, something changed, and I'm like, wait. I don't know if I know who the main character is now. And that's where it really gave me a twist that I was not expecting. Because then, basically what you're following a girl that works for like a CIA-type agency. And...
Well, her backstory pretty much says, you know, she's been doing this for forever. Her dad died, and
yeah.
She's kind of doing the same thing of drinking a lot, but kind of just relating to her dead father.
Yeah. And I am going to spoil this because I had to go back and reread this multiple times. Now, it opens up with her as a young girl, her dad teaching her how to shoot, and then she later happens to run into her dad in France, who is still a secret agent, and you find out that he faked his own death to protect his family and all that, but he now has a new family, which that's just awkward. I went back and I reread this and I'm like, okay, now I get it. And then as I started going through, I'm like, wait a second. I went back and read this for the third time and I told Tony, I told you about this last night. I can't remember the last time I read a comic three times. And the story is so damn good that you can constantly pick up more. And the artwork in here is just gorgeous. And there's just a lot of things that are done in here, from the layouts to how the word panels are put in there, to the colors and everything else, that really add a lot of emotion to this book that I haven't seen in a while. So, and it's, I actually made you read it.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
I liked it. I also, I may have to go back and reread it. Again, for what I remembered was her kind of talking about not really killing, trying to get in and out, kind of secret spying, where it seemed like her father's thing was a lot more kill, gunfire, just go in, blaze of glory. Like, almost like polar opposites of doing the same espionage spy thing.
Yeah.
Which is another cool feature of, like, how they wrote this story and put it together of them then meeting, and I don't know.
It's one of the things that I really liked about this, too. And I guess there's the little, a little preview thing on the back of the book where it says "Train to Trust No One," and it says the deep cover agents of Project Delta are ghosts. No birth certificate, social security number, and an identity malleable to what is necessary for the mission. And you know, the main character, whose code name is Butterfly, which is why it's named that, her cover gets blown and she's set up for a murder which she didn't actually have a part of, and so she's trying to escape and take cover and whatnot. But the one thing that I didn't notice until the third time that I read this was the front. You have, you know, a depiction of the main character, Butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
And the back has her father kind of back to back with her. It's a just a great layout overall. This book really impressed me. And I don't know. I've really enjoyed this one. I could see this being the type of book that would be made into like a short film, or possibly even a longer feature film. Although for the pace of which this book plays, I don't know if a full-length feature film would have that same intensity. Because this book, I mean, I burned through it the first time. And then I went and I slowed down the second time and the third time, I burned through it again. So, highly recommend go pick up Butterfly number 104 from Arkea.
And must be said, this person that did the cover art, I think, is copying our friend intern Jim on art style.
Yeah. Well, Jim's art has always had influences from Phil Noto. But, yeah, so. All right, Tony, Booze in a Book?
Yes, Booze in a Book this week is pretty much brought to you by Oktoberfest because...
Well, it's actually brought to you by InkWhiskey.com.
Wasn't the whole thing brought to you by InkWhiskey.com?
Well, yeah, but here's where we get to, like, actually talk about them a little bit more.
Okay, well, we can talk about them. Well, so InkWhiskey, who has these awesome retro NES flasks, bring this to you as well as... I'm just saying Oktoberfest because that's where I got the beer and pretty wasted, so...
You got Clocktobered.
Yes. I'm taking Warsteiner Premium Dunkel, which is only 4.9%, but it...
Warsteiner!
But it tastes so good. But just saying Dunkel just makes me happy. It's a funny word. And pairing that with Bob's Burgers number 2, because it's something that Gene would say just going around, Dunkel! Dunkel!
I'm gonna have a Dunkel!
It's fun.
I took a Dunkel in the toilet!
And besides the fun of saying it, it's fun to drink and it's fun to read, so
yeah,
good pairing.
Bob's Burgers was almost my pick of the week, like for off the shelf. I was this close to talking about Bob's Burgers, but Wayward beat it out. So, which that leads me into last call, unless there's anything else before that we need to take care of.
Nope. It's been a tight little show today.
It has been a nice, tight little show. Oh, go buy your flasks at InkWhiskey.com, which we kind of got to unveil some new ones to people here last weekend at Grand Con, and very well received. And I actually did see one of the flasks last night at Oktoberfest.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sweet, man, sweet.
Yeah. All right, A Town Called Dragon, number 1 from Legendary. Was a very, very chunky monkey book, and written by Judd Winnick, which I haven't seen anything from him in a while, and I was excited to see a book from him.
New Avengers dropped them into the 8 months of the future, and just reading it, just like, fuck, man, shit's going to be happening in Marvel that readers haven't even gotten to yet until the 8 months out thing.
Yeah. Roche Limit. Number 1 from Image.
Edge of Spider-Verse keeps coming out with a new book each week. This one had a robotic-type Spider-Man. So,
yeah.
Robots are cool.
Robots are cool. And actually, that was one of the best parts about Bob's Burgers was the first little story is Tina's erotic friend fiction. And it was Battlestar Galactina.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Pesto is a robot, and actually my favorite little thing is, like, you know, they're signing a peace treaty and they're having a dance to celebrate, and so he's the head of the robots and she's the head of the humans, and they're gonna dance. She's like, come on, we can both do the robot together, and he's like, goes, that's actually kind of offensive to our people.
There's this new writer, Charles Soule, and this up and coming artist, Ryan Stegman, had this book in Inhuma. Yeah,
Inhuma. Yeah.
Come out.
Yeah, and then Saga, of course.
Yeah, Superman Doomed, number 2. Puts an end to that story arc. Somehow is tying into this Future's End thing happening in DC. Yay. Podcast listeners will have to tell me what's going on there. But that's a nice. It was a nice ending to the story arc. I'm not 100% on board for where it's leading, but we'll see.
You are so happy right now.
Well, I mean, I was telling you before, Derek. Like, I love DC, but I don't know. I'm worried. I'm worried.
Yeah,
I might have to pick up some Marvel titles.
Or you can get caught up on the rest of Saga.
Hey, I read some.
Yeah, you did.
Get off my back, bro.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy number 19. This was almost my pick this week because, to be honest, with these main characters that are in here, trying to explain how they got out of the Cancerverse, I thought this was going to tie it up. Nope, they did it to be continued again. Annoyed me a little bit. However, probably one of the best things in here, when they realize they can't die and they're fighting Thanos and they're beating each other up, and Drax already pretty much took the Cosmic Cube and pretty much destroyed Thanos, and he came back again. He goes, does that hurt? And Thanos goes, yes, a lot. Why? He goes, okay, good. Pretty much sticks the cosmic cube right in his face. And
I was just looking at the fact that Thanos looks a lot like Sam Jackson.
Could be
see, that panel in particular. I see it. All right, guys. I think that's going to do it for us then. I'm Derek.
I'm Tony.
Hi.
And that's Kevin.
Yeah, guys. Keep reading your comics. We'll be back next week to talk to you about them again then. Con!
It was like forced, just like in a movie.
I'm going to force something.